Welcome to Sales Fiction, a podcast that helps small sales teams get big results. I'm your host, Christy Lawrence, the founder of Mighty Sales and a longtime sales professional who traded my corporate sales career to help small but mighty teams do more with less. Each week on this podcast, we separate sales fact from sales fiction so that you can hyper-focus your effort on the skills, strategies, and tools that will have the biggest impact on your bottom line. Let's dive right in. I am so excited for this episode of Sales Fiction. We have a very special guest with us who has been just such a mentor and a bright light in my life since I started my business and moved to Bend. Ali Camaletti has been an entrepreneur for 18 years with a foundation of relationship building sales. In her current business, Spark Your Mindset, she focuses on leadership and sales coaching. She is an amazing professional who brings so much expertise to the teams that she coaches, but more so than expertise, she brings a heart for sales as service and really sales doing the right thing. So I am so excited to have you here, Ali. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Christy, so much. I appreciate you asking me to join.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm so excited for you to be here. So just for the listeners to have some background, I remember the first time I reached out to you when I had moved to Bend, Oregon, and you were just so open about sharing your expertise, about connecting with me, about connecting in the community. And I loved when we connected because you have a very similar philosophy to sales that I do. So if you were going to sum up your philosophy to sales in just a couple sentences, how would you describe it?
I will say it's always relationship building.
Yeah.
That's the base and the foundation of everything that I do. I don't even really consider it sales.
And I think that's what me and you have in common, right? Is that I'm like, sales is such a kind of word that people get wrapped up in and that has a lot of baggage with it. But for people like you and I who've been doing sales our whole career, coaching people in sales, it doesn't feel like sales.
No. And really, that is the deprogramming that I talk about often with them. Because being in the hospitality industry, it's not always seen as sales, right? They're hospitality. And So often what happens with the teams that I work with in the vacation rental management industry is they will come in as a guest service person. And the next thing you know, they're on sales calls.
Yeah.
And like even saying they're on sales calls, they're like, ugh. And so when I go in to talk with these teams, I talk about my journey in sales and how I was the same way. And it's always kind of weird, even when I say it, because of being raised with that, you know, car salesman mentality. That's how we grew up in that, ooh, it's slimy. And so I just always go in as, no, we're building relationships. Sales will organically happen when you follow these steps.
Absolutely. So do you mind sharing a little bit about your own journey in sales, how you got started in sales? I think it's always interesting. I don't know a lot of people that are like, I'm going to be in sales when I grow up.
It's really funny because I was anti. I grew up and my parents divorced at a young age and my father was a salesperson. And my mom was always negative about it. She was in retail. And so she always said, you know, my dad could sell an Eskimo an ice cream cone. And I watched his journey in sales and that was something I just wasn't in. I was in hospitality, right? I was in restaurants and then made my way over to actual more resort and vacation rental management specifically, I've been focusing a good amount on. And so I actually back right when I graduated out of college, I was getting into country club lodging management at the time. And as I was applying, I ended up going and doing timeshare sales. And I just did it because I needed a job while I was applying and I was good. I was really good, but I didn't want to do that, right? That was sales. Ooh, I want to go into what I actually graduated to do. And so I got out of it and started doing the country club management piece. And then a funny conversation happened. It was back in 2009. I had dissolved my event planning business that I had for, I'd say, 8 years in Bend here. And I was going to work for a company doing corporate technology education. And I was sitting down with the gentleman and he said, you know what, Ali, you have this great resume. You have a lot of customer service because I'd been teaching customer service at the college and I always called it customer service. And he goes, but you know, you don't have a lot of sales. And I was already hired at this point and I had to think about it. And I came back and I was like, are you kidding me? I had an event planning company for 8 years. People weren't walking away with big screen TVs. They were walking away with peace of mind. And so I had been doing it the whole time. I just never considered it sales, ever.
I love that. It actually reminds me. So I started my career in public relations and worked at a big PR firm in Seattle. And I remember when I first wanted to get into medical sales and the question being like, you don't have sales experience. And I'm like, actually, I do. Like, I'm constantly having to sell journalists why they should care about this product, this service, and why it's important to their readers and why they should write a story about it. That ultimately, almost everything we do is sales. We just classify it differently for some reason.
So true.
So as you think along your journey in sales, what is the best piece of sales advice you've ever received?
So I can't remember getting specific advice, but I have this thing where I deep dive into sales techniques.
Okay.
And the best deep dive I did was on asking questions. And I go in and I Google, I read articles, I listen to podcasts, I do all the education behind it because I also give that to my clients in between coaching sessions as homework when they're working in specific areas. Because I want them to hear from different voices about techniques. And it was the questions and how people will like you if you just ask questions and really act like you're engaged. And I remember going to a conference and I was like, I'm going to test this because I am one that I will connect. I'll find something in common and we'll connect on that. And that's what builds the relationship. So I was like, all right, I'm not going to say a thing. I'm just going to ask questions. And I did it with this lady who she had multiple vacation rental management company locations throughout the US. We even lived in the same town and we were up in Washington at the time. And it was probably 10 minutes. I just asked questions. I knew all kinds of things about her. And at the end, she hugged me. And I was kind of like taken back. I mean, I'm a hugger, but I was still like, holy moly. Yeah. She doesn't know I live in Bend. She doesn't know what I do. She knows nothing about me.
Yeah. This is why I say we have so much in common. I think questions is the number one thing that people in sales need to learn to master. That it's not about differentiating your product. It's not about a unique value proposition. It's not about having fancy closing techniques. That if you can master the art of asking questions, meaningful questions and engaging questions, your success in sales will skyrocket. And there is no better tool.
Absolutely. And for with the coaching I do, it's all focused on open-ended. And that's what I literally go in and I listen to sales calls and I coach them on criteria that I score. And sometimes it's hard to think of those open-ended questions when they give you a lot of information and things that will engage that might feel not as sales-like, but in vacation rental management, I was listening to this call recently. A woman had called in and she said she was going through a divorce and she'd be living in this vacation rental for 2 months as she was going through this divorce, figuring things out. And the lady didn't say anything. And empathy is a whole nother piece of what should have been done there. But the other question I wanted her to ask was, what kind of home would make you feel really comfortable during this time that you're processing?
Yeah.
Connection, you're hearing that she needs to process and be in her feelings and you're respecting that. That's what's going to make somebody feel like they're being heard and you get them and you're going to take care of them.
And that to me is the heart of like when you really understand human psychology, the number one desire, one of the number one desires that all of us have as human beings is belonging, right? And within that feeling, seen and heard. And when you ask questions and you listen, you essentially give people an avenue to be seen and heard and in that feel valued. Everything else is secondary to that.
Yeah.
It's funny too. I am always the number one thing that I have my clients do when I first start working with them is actually brainstorm a list of questions to ask during the sales process. It's like, okay, what questions are we going to ask? And we just have running documents of questions. And every time you think of an interesting question, engaging question, or you asked a question, put it on the list. And that's such a great resource. I mean, we use scripts too, but in addition to scripts, if you have a go-to list of questions, it makes the sales process so much easier.
And I do that same thing with personalizing. And so for them, it's how do we connect? And that is a really tough one. I remember somebody asking me, Ellie, when you're doing sales coaching, what do you think is the number one thing that people struggle with? And she said, like, as she asked me, she's like, I know it's asking for the reservation. I said, not with the people I work with. She's like, what? And it's like, yeah, it's actually personalizing and connecting. And so we break it down into different styles of people, what kind of questions those people that are calling in ask, like who, what, why questions, and understanding if they are more of dominant or more of somebody that is more inspirational, right? We're going to be more direct with how we personalize, talking about, oh, I drive that route to Boston all the time. So depending on the time of day, you'll probably be able to get here in 45 minutes when I've driven from my sister's house. But there's been some days, if there's a game going on, you're stuck in traffic for like an hour and a half. So just be aware of that, right? So that's more like it's specific to them and their needs. Whereas the other personalizing might be, oh, I love this house because you can walk right down to the beach and you'll have kayaks from the house. So my favorite thing to do right there in the bay is kayak.
Yeah, I love that. I'm actually thinking about, as you're talking about the personalization piece, so I know I asked you the best piece of sales advice you've ever received, but one of the best pieces of sales advice that you passed on to me was that it's not about the golden rule, it's about the platinum rule, and that you don't treat others in sales the way you want to be treated, you treat them the way they want to be treated. And I think that is something that's really stuck with me. Do you want to say a little bit about that?
It takes us back to questions. How do you know how people want to be treated if you haven't asked them questions and really dug into those questions?
Really understand them.
Yeah, because you and I, Christy, are very similar, but what might be important to you in certain situations might not be important to me.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think the hardest thing for me is when I am doing sales conversations with another salesperson that's really good at asking questions and they keep asking me questions and I'm trying to ask them questions and it's this awkward, like, no, I'm going to ask you more questions. I don't know if you've ever run into that.
I have not.
It's only happened a couple of times, but I'm like, oh, now I got to like up my game a little bit because you're stealing my question asking from me.
I was just having this conversation about somebody that's in hospitality and looking at going into sales, and it's sales of a product and very foreign. I mean, this is a chef and has all the skills, but I said, the one thing I'm going to say to you is asking questions. Because he's like, it's not always knowing about sales. It's also being an expert in your field. I said, it is, but it's also knowing that you need to ask questions.
Mm-hmm. Well, and if you can help people position themselves as experts and teach them how what you are offering helps them demonstrate their expertise and connect more with themselves, they are going to be much more likely to buy. So I want to ask you, so this podcast is called Sales Fiction because there are, in my opinion, a lot of myths around sales that keep people stuck from engaging in sales in productive and successful ways. And so one of my goals is always to break down those sales myths and actually teach what the truth is around sales. So in that vein, what's the worst piece of sales advice that you've ever received?
I think the worst advice was just how negative sales is. Mm-hmm. And that was a perception that just was ingrained in me forever. And for me, it's more about a mindset. It's a mindset that, one, it is a numbers game. We know that.
Yeah.
Because I own my own business. I go out and do sales. I know that
you're a business owner, you're doing sales.
Right. And it's a mindset that I'm not going in pushing. I'm helping. I'm giving opportunity. And the other part is you have to constantly do it.
Yeah.
You can't stop. You're always out there. And once a year, I do an initiative. And then I do other things throughout the year to put myself out there. And naturally, business comes, but I always do an initiative once a year.
So I think that's so important because I see I talk a lot about the revenue roller coaster that a lot of business owners and people in sales are in, where they put a lot of effort into sales and then they start getting the returns from that and they get busy and then they have to implement, right, and deliver what it is they're selling. And then they don't have a strategy or a system in place to continue some momentum in sales. So then they're busy, busy, busy. Then all of a sudden that work dries up and then they have to start from scratch again versus continuing to put some effort into sales on a regular basis. So if you were going to talk to somebody, what's one or two things that they can do to just continue to have some effort around sales when things are getting busy?
That is very hard. And I have experienced that as well. When I do my sales initiative and then I'm like, I'm busy. Now I'm building this and I'm, you know, onboarding. And how do I still keep myself out there? I would say one of the key things is, one, you go back to people you've already worked with. That's your best sales lead right there. And in the industry I do, what happens is that we do an outbound calling initiative. And that is, when did they book last year? When did they come and stay last year? What weeks are still available? Let's scrub the list. Have they already booked or are they still lingering out there and haven't? And we do an outbound sales initiative.
I love that. Yeah. With previous customers.
Absolutely. Yes. Yeah. That came last year. Saw that you came last year. We do a warm-up email and then we do a call.
Yeah. I love that. I think that's fantastic. I think people often overlook previous leads and previous customers, and they're always trying to start from scratch, which is just making things way harder than they need to be.
Yeah. Because if they already know you and your product, like I have, when I just do content type presentations, I usually work with those clients every couple years because their team needs to be inspired again. And especially after this last year, right? But that is my best book of business right there.
Absolutely. And I mean, that's the hard part when you're starting out, that book is smaller, but it's still, who are the connections? Who do you have? Who do they know? But there is a time and a place for cold outreach. And I am a big proponent of doing cold outreach and not being scared of it, but also in that not to overlook the warm contacts that you already have and to start there as you're building your confidence and you're building your systems. And more often than not, for a lot of people, once they've worked their cold warm contact list, they're busy and they've hit their sales goals.
Yeah, the cold is the hardest. And when I was back going to conferences, I would get a list of attendees and I would still consider them warm by sending an email and saying, you might have attended my presentation on this topic. Yeah. I'll be reaching out to you if I don't hear from you first this next week. And that always feels cold. But you know, I've had the best conversations. Yeah. When, like, it doesn't always mean it's going to be an actual revenue producing, but it's a relationship for me. And then the next time I see them, and then they might, you know, they might not be in a position that they're looking for that, but they're going to say, oh, you know what? Allie just called me to another company.
Absolutely. I mean, I even feel like if you're doing outreach and you know someone's not a good customer, or maybe they are, but you're hesitant about like selling to them. Hey, you know, I've got some room on my calendar to be able to do XYZ. Do you happen to know anyone who would be a good fit? It's such a powerful question. And more often than not, people often think, hey, that might be me. And if not, then they think of somebody else.
And so making sure to ask how they heard about you.
Absolutely.
That, like once you get that business, sometimes we forget to be like, how did you hear about me?
Yeah. How did you even discover that I existed? So you can keep leveraging what's working.
Yeah.
I want to change gears a little bit because I know you work a lot with sales leaders and helping them develop leadership techniques to help their sales teams be successful. So when you think about sales leaders specifically, what do you see as the biggest mistake that sales leaders make when it comes to setting their teams up for success?
Creating too competitive of an environment.
Say more about that.
I think it comes from a leader that maybe doesn't feel confident in sales and why this comes up, but really not doing the due diligence to create a team environment. When I worked for this technology company, we had a term called co-competition.
Okay.
And it was the idea that we wanted people to still, salespeople are always going to be slightly competitive. That's in their nature, right? But we still want that team environment. We do not want them creating distrust in environments and not having empathy for one another and going for the revenue internally. It will be so disruptive.
Yeah, when you're actually, it's like running into each other trying to make a catch.
Yes.
Basically. and versus what's best for the team and what's best for the team and the customer is going to be what's best for each individual as well.
And so it's how you put those incentives in place, making sure there's always a team incentive as well, how we recognize and reward people.
And I have actually found team incentives are a lot more powerful than individual incentives. And especially when we have incentives around, if everyone on the team hits this level, then everyone gets ABC in terms of an incentive. And then if you're basically one of the only people that's not hitting that, you do feel compelled to not let your team members down. And oftentimes it's easier to let ourselves down than it is to let other people down. It also creates the mindset of how do we help our team members be successful? Because my success depends on their success.
Yeah. Yeah. I work with this survey. It's a culture survey called Tigers, and it's six principles. And so it's trust, interdependence, working together, genuineness, which that is how do we give each other feedback in a kind way, empathy, risk. Let's admit it when we make a mistake. And then what success looks like, how do we reward and recognize people? And it's a really good foundation for thriving teams.
So, and this probably leads into my next question is, and I'm sure that's an element of it, but what things do you see successful leaders doing differently that kind of helps them separate from the pack?
That is it right there.
You're like said, done.
It is. Diane Crampton came up with these six principles, yeah. And I was introduced to them. Oh, wow. I want to say it might be almost 20 years now ago. And I've just recently been implementing them with teams. And it is having that humble, compassionate leader. I also have a leadership podcast called Snack Leadership. And in June, I have a piece coming out on emotional intelligence. And it's something that is so important with really good leaders is having that emotional intelligence. And it has a piece of empathy in it, obviously.
I love that. I want to thank you so much for your time. This was just chock full of such great information. Before we wrap up, is there anything that we haven't hit on that when you think about sales might get overlooked or that you are passionate about that you want to share?
Being a coach, I'm always going to say, you got to coach. I was just listening to this TED Talk by the owner of Zappos, and he was talking about how important it is to spend time with your people and how productivity increased anywhere from 20 to 100% because he required that those leaders spent good one-on-one time. And the leaders would even struggle with like, it doesn't feel productive. He goes, it is productive. You're building trust. Mm-hmm. Trusting teams work together. They're going to be quick to help one another out. And that's what we want in this organization. We want people to feel good about working with one another. So it's coaching.
Yeah. And I love that. I always feel like when it comes to salespeople, I feel like there's a tendency to feel like once you've been in sales for a while and you've had some success that you know everything that there is to know, but that we can all be coached and coached and continue to get better. And sometimes it's small little adjustments that make a huge difference or just awareness, and that even the most successful salespeople can benefit from coaching.
And I will say I've worked with salespeople, but they know all the lingo. And then I go in and score calls. And it's not happening.
Well, it's hard, right? Because when you're in it, you're focused on the customer, you're kind of focused on the process, and you don't see everything. And so being able to get that feedback to pull out the things that you might not be aware of is incredibly, incredibly valuable.
And not doing it in a fear-based, because that's what came up. And she's like, oh, I just need to remember that you're listening to my calls. I'm like, I don't want you to be operating out of fear. That's not what we're going for here.
It's like, this is how you should be doing, thinking about all the time, whether someone's listening or not. Make every call like someone's listening.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think there's a fine line in that too, that comes into play is this fear leadership. And you really do not want to do that.
That coaching isn't about being judged or criticized or critiqued. It's a feedback mechanism. That's what I always say. It's like the gas gauge, right? It's just saying where you're at on the gas gauge. Like, oh, if I'm at a quarter tank, doesn't mean I did something wrong. It just means I need to go to the gas station and get some more gas.
Well, in one of these situations with the Zappos is that somebody was producing at a really high level. And the thought was, there's nothing to coach them on. But if this person doesn't feel like they are learning or growing, they're out. Yeah. So they're who you want to coach even more.
Yeah. That your performers still want to continue to grow and evolve too.
Especially those high level ones.
Yeah, absolutely. No one wants to feel complacent or stuck and like they're not growing. So how can people get in touch with you, Allie? You have so much wisdom and so much expertise. What's the best way for people to connect with you?
Thank you, Christy. So the business is called Spark Your Mindset, and that's the URL. You can also find me on Snack, like you're eating an afternoon snack, leadership podcast. The concept is 15-minute bite-sized pieces of content. My belief is that we're all leaders. We don't need to have anybody reporting to us. It's a mindset that we put out there. And you could probably just put any of that into social media and you'd find me. Because Camilletti is kind of hard to spell. So I'm not going to make you go down that road.
You guys didn't hear, but before the podcast, I was telling Allie how I say her last name wrong all the time. And so it sounds like an Italian pasta dish, but it sounds good when I say it in my head. Like, it makes me happy. So I'm trying to pronounce it right for the podcast day. Camilletti, not Calametti.
The doubles, it just freaks people out.
It's a lot. Allie, thank you so much for joining us today. I really, really appreciate all of your insight and expertise. It is great to connect with you.
Thank you, Christy. And thank you for producing these. It's great content for me to share with my clients as well.